We had hiked all day, and we had arrived at the mountain village by about 7 o'clock, and the sun was beginning to set, and we had just enough time to talk to the chief of the village and ask him if we could have his permission to stay inside of one of his shepherd huts up in the mountains. After some talking and after some greeting and after giving him a 5-pound bag of sugar, the chief agreed that we could stay in one of his shepherd huts, and he reminded us that there were two huts on the mountain and we had to be sure to get the right one. Off we went, climbing the mountain as the sun sank into the horizon. We arrived at the meadow near the mountain's peak. And we indeed saw two shepherd huts, and the conversation began. Did the chief say it would be the one on the left or the one on the right? I don't know. What do you think? Well, if we decide the left, whose left did the chief say? We weren't sure what side of the mountain we were going to be coming on, and the trail moved around. Finally, it was getting so late and so dark and so cold there in that southern African village mountain that we decided we would just pick a hut and go to sleep. We went to the stone hut and we leaned down and we hollered inside, "Anybody in here?" There was no response, so we crawled inside. The floor was covered with a huge cow skin rug, fur up, and it was lovely. So we unfurled our sleeping bags and we went to sleep. When we awakened the next morning, we awakened to the sound of bells. We crawled to the door of the hut and looked outside, and we were surrounded by sheep. And we saw a shepherd sitting in the midst of the sheep. Pulled on our shorts, rifled around to find the coffee, and crawled out of the hut to begin to prepare breakfast. The shepherd beckoned us over, and we went to talk to him, and we were really excited to hear about the shepherd's life and to hear about the sheep, and we wondered when he had arrived back at the meadow, because we know that we had gone to bed around 10 at night, and at that time there was no shepherd, there were no sheep. But the shepherd wanted to talk about something else. The shepherd said, "Is there a cow skin rug in there?" "Yes," we said. He said, "Oh, thank goodness, I thought I had the wrong hut." "That's my hut. The chief's hut is the one over there." Turns out we had slept in his place that night. So to make up for it, we asked if he would have breakfast with us, and we got out the food and we started making the coffee, and he found some weeds and rolled them up and began to smoke the weeds that he'd plucked right out of the ground, and then began to tell us about the sheep. There were dozens and dozens of sheep, maybe even 100 of them, and they all looked the same to me. They looked very sheepish. And as I looked from sheep to sheep to sheep, I thought, how in the world does this guy keep track of them all? And he was sitting there drawing on his weed cigarette. Not the kind of weed cigarette we talk about here. Just a cigarette made out of weeds. He began to tell us about sheep. Which one was born when? Who were the parents of which one? Who had a difficult birth? Who'd been with him the longest? Which lambs were the most mischievous? He even brought over one lamb, held it in his lap, and showed us how it had a birth defect on one ear. And he could tell us everything about every sheep. Now, I listened to that story and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I can't wait for the sermons I'm going to preach about this. A real shepherd and real sheep, and every one is valuable. Just wait till that comes up. And I have preached, even to you before, about this shepherd and that day. But usually when I do it, I talk about sentimentality. This guy really seemed to love these sheep. He really seemed to care about these sheep. He really seemed to know these sheep. But the more we talked, the more we also understood that these sheep were his livelihood. And the reason he knew them so well is because they had intrinsic value to him. They mattered, each and every one of them, for who they were, because they were a part of the herd, and shearing them and occasionally selling or slaughtering them and occasionally breeding them is how he was able to live. They had value. They were worthwhile, every single one. What if you lose one, we asked. He said, well, then I go and get it. Well, what do you do with the other ones? He said, they usually can take care of themselves, but it's always a risk. But if I lose one, I have to go find it. Every single sheep is valuable. When Jesus tells the parable of the lost sheep, it's not just about sentimentality. It's not just to tug at our heartstrings. It's also about value. That lost sheep is valuable. That lost sheep is important. That lost sheep matters. And Jesus tells the story of the woman and the 10 coins, having lost one, sweeping all night, searching for that coin, having found the one coin, celebrates and lets everyone know. It's not just about sentimentality. It's not just that this woman is over-exuberant. It's about value. If you've got 10 coins of the same value and you lose one, you've just lost 10% of your worth. Maybe we could put that in different terms. Imagine that you go to work and you earn, let's say for a round number, $50,000 a year, and all of a sudden you go to work one day and they tell you you're going to have $5,000 fewer dollars in your budget this year. You've lost 1/10. You go home and you share that with whomever you share your financial news. There's sorrow. There's budgeting. There's difficulty. Imagine going back the next day and finding out it was a clerical error. You're not going to be losing that $5,000. Would you celebrate? Would you be happy? Would you rejoice? It's about value, not just sentimentality. Jesus tells this parable to people who understand what it means that each sheep is of particular value to every shepherd. Jesus tells this to people who understand that if you have 10 coins and if you lose one, it's a big deal. We hear it today. Yes, it should tug at our heartstrings. Yes, sheep are cute. Yes, coins are nice. But we need to hear it as an expression of human value. Jesus says, if in those value-laden stories you understand what it means to rejoice for a lost sheep, you understand what it means to rejoice for a recovered coin, how much more would the God who creates, redeems, and sustains you rejoice when one valuable human being has a transformation of heart and mind? The numbers are staggering. Sidney mentioned billions. Billions of other human beings on this planet. 6 billion, 7 billion, getting close to 8 billion. What's the number these days? It's so big, it's hard to keep track. There's no way that you could know well hundreds or thousands of those billions and billions. But does that make them any less valuable? Certainly not to God. Jesus tells us that. Does that make them any less valuable? Certainly not to us. Jesus assures us of that. Their faces might be unknown to us. Their stories may be stories we've never heard. Their backgrounds might be different from ours. But all of those billions of people matter to God, and therefore matter to us. We share a planet with them. We share an ecosystem with them. We share a history with them. We share life with them. Sometimes it's hard to think about all those people so far away. Sometimes it's hard to think about people who are just around us, because, you know, it's also true with sheep. Not every sheep likes every other sheep. Just like not every person enjoys the company of every other person. But that doesn't make any person any less valuable. Today, as we consider what it means that God rejoices when even one person who's felt alienated from God and others has a transformation of heart and mind, realizes their value, and is welcomed into the community, we must also rejoice for those moments. And not only rejoice for those moments, but seek for those moments. Not only seek for those moments, but look and work for those moments. Because after all, who are we but individual sheep in the flock? Who are we but individual people among the population? Who am I but one for whom God sought? Who am I but one who's working each and every day with faith to try to open my heart and mind to transformation? Who am I but one who struggles, who's not sure if he's doing the right thing, who's not sure if he's going the right way, who's not sure if others care about him? And you, who are you but one who struggles? Well, from time to time, you're not sure if you're doing the right thing, not sure if you're going the right way, not sure if you have a community of care around you. It's one thing to think about that story of the sheep from the perspective of the shepherd. It's another to think about it from the perspective of the 99. But what does it mean to be the one? Lost, without the protection of the flock, without the guidance of the shepherd, maybe injured, maybe wondering if and when you'll be surrounded again by that protective community. What does it mean in our lives when we feel isolated, lost, confused, to know that our value has not diminished, to know that God loves us as fiercely as God has always loved us? And what will and can it mean to know that there's a community of faith that seeks for us, that welcomes us, that longs for us, that is not complete without us? I don't know about you, but for me, that's an incredible feeling to know that I have value to God, no matter what, that I have value to God, even when I'm feeling my lowest and my loneliness. And to know that I have a community of faith to which I connect, to whom I belong. Because you are the one, because you have been the one, what will it mean to reach out to other ones? What will it mean when we hear the story of one who has been abused or excluded because of who that one loves? Will we say, well, that's just someone unlike me, someone I do not know, that's just someone? Or will we remember that you and I are just someone, beloved by God, included in community, called to transformation, What if we hear the story of someone who's rejected at a border or turned away when they're hungry or cold or sick? Will we say, that's just someone, it's someone I don't know, it's someone I've never met, it's someone I can't help? Will you and I remember that we are each just someone? Someone that has needs and has been helped in those needs. Someone who is beloved by God and has called out to that God from time to time at our lowest and most fearful and desperate points of our lives. And we remember that each of those someones have value. Each of those someones is someone to God, and should therefore be someone to us. From a distance, it really does look like all the sheep are the same, and they all just go along with the crowd. But Jesus was speaking to a crowd that knew about sheep and agriculture and shepherds and things. Jesus knew that they would hear not just sentimentality, but value. You're valuable, says Jesus, every one of you. And those ones that might seem like they're outside the flock, that might seem different, that might seem lost, they're valuable too. Very valuable. So much so that when they receive their welcome, when they have a transformation of heart and mind, when they have returned to the flock, there's rejoicing, not just here, but throughout the universe. There's rejoicing. What does it mean to be a one who has been found? And what does it mean to have our eyes wide open and our hearts and hands as well to welcome, to find, to celebrate with the one, wherever that one is found? Let us be those who thank God that we are found, that we are welcomed, and let us be those who open our eyes and hearts and spread our arms wide that others will know and hear and celebrate with us their value. In the name of our God, Amen.